Epilogue. Eileen knocked on the door of the Cooper's shop. Her hair covered, back bent, and foot twisted sideways in the dust. The Caladoran army had arrived yesterday, and King Gareth Orsul was rewarding his troops for their valor by allowing selected soldiers to take what they desired. It wasn't a good day to be a pretty woman on the streets of Cenaria. It had taken her 2 harrowing days to find this place. The Cooper unbolted the door and signaled her in, gesturing to the back of the shop. Jarl was at a table covered with papers, fat sacks of money at his feet. "I found your way out," he said. "A Caladoran caravan master has agreed to take you. You'll have to lie in a compartment used to smuggle Baruch tea and worse things until you get outside the gates, but it's big enough to hold you and the girl. You leave at nightfall."
"You can trust this smuggler," Eileen said.
"I can't trust anyone," Jarl said, exhausted. "He's Caladoran and you're beautiful, but because he's Caladoran, he has the best chance of getting through the gates, and he's worked with us for 20 years. I've made it in his best interest to take you safely."
"You must have paid him a fortune," Eileen said.
"Only half of one," Jarl said, the shadow of a smile coming to his lips. "The other half he gets when you send me word that you've made it safely."
"Thank you."
"It's the least I could do for Kylar." Jarl looked down, ashamed. "It's also the most I can do."
Eileen hugged him.
"It's more than enough."
"Thank you.
The girl's downstairs. She won't leave his ba- She won't leave him."
He recognized this place. The white gold warmth suffused him. His flesh gloried in the light. He moved through the tunnel with sure and easy steps, eagerness, without hurry. Gentle fingers closed his eyes. A child shrieked. Regrets. Sorrow. Darkness. Cold. He blinked away the nightmare, breathed, let the white gold light hold him again.
"Grab his arm, Uli. Help me."
Cold stone slid under his back. Discomfort, pain, hopelessness. Then even the cold and the jostling faded. He walked forward unsteadily in the tunnel, broke into a jog. This was where he belonged now, here, without pain. A tear splashed on his face. A woman spoke, but he couldn't make out the words. He stumbled and fell. He lay there, terrified, but the nightmare didn't come back. He got up to his knees, stood. At the next step, he smacked up against nothing. He put his hands out and felt the invisible barrier. It was as cool as iron and as smooth as glass. Beyond it, the warmth increased. The white gold light beckoned him. Were those people up ahead? Something was pulling him aside, away. He felt twisted, and slowly a chamber came into focus. Not the chamber, for the chamber itself remained indistinct. It seemed full of people, intensely curious to see him, but he couldn't make them out. All that was truly in focus was a man seated before him on a low throne, and 2 doors. The door at his right hand was of beaten gold. Light leaked around every edge, the same warm white gold light Kylar had just been in. The door to his left hand was plain wood with a simple iron latch. The man's face was dominated by lambent, lupine yellow eyes. He wasn't tall, but he exuded authority, potency.
"What is this place?"
Kylar asked.
A toothy smile. "Neither heaven nor hell. This, if you will, is the antechamber of the mystery. This is my realm.
Who are you?
It pleased Achilles to call me the Wolf.
Achilles? You mean Durzo?
Kylar asked.
Before you there is a choice. You may proceed through one door or the other. Choose the gold, and I will release you back to where you just were, and you will have my apology for interrupting your journey.
My journey?
Your journey to heaven, or hell, or oblivion, or reincarnation, or whatever it is that death holds.
Do you know? Kylar asked.
This is the antechamber of the mystery, Azoth. You will find no answers here, just choices.
The Wolf grinned, and it was a joyless grin, a predatory grin.
Through the wood door, you will go back to your life, your body, your time. Or nearly so. It will take a few days for your body to heal. You will be the Night Angel in truth, as Achilles was before you. Your body will be immune to the scourge of time as Achilles's was, something that perhaps one must become old to appreciate. You will also heal at a rate beyond that of mortal men. What you call your talent will grow. You can still be killed. The difference is, you will come back. You will be a living legend.
It sounded wonderful. Too good, even. I'd be like Achilles Thorne. I'd be like Durzo. The latter thought gave him pause. The burden of immortality, however it worked, or the power of it, or sheer press of so much time, was what had turned Achilles Thorne, the prince, the hero, into Durzo Blint, the hopeless, bitter murderer. He remembered his snide remark to Durzo.
Here I thought the Night Angels were invincible.
They're immortal. It's not the same.
Why would you do this for me? Kylar asked.
Perhaps I don't do anything at all. Perhaps it is the Kakari's work. What's the price?
Ah, Durzo has taught you well, hasn't he?
The Wolf looked almost mournful.
The truth is, I don't know. I can only tell you what I have heard from those more enlightened than I. They believed that coming back from death as you would was such a violation of the natural order of things that this unnatural life cost the afterlife. That for his 7 centuries of life, Achilles traded all eternity. But they might be wrong. It might have no influence on eternity whatsoever, or there may be no eternity to influence. I'm the wrong man to ask, for I have chosen this life for myself.
Kylar walked toward the golden door. It was so beautiful there. He'd had such peace. What fool would trade the eternal peace and happiness in that gold light for the blood and gore and dishonor and despair and duplicity of the life he'd led? As he stepped closer to it, the door changed. The gold melted, puddled to the ground in an instant, and a raging inferno leapt up, eager to devour Kylar. Then it was gone, and the gold door was back. Kylar shot a look at the Wolf.
Eternity, the Wolf said, might not be a pleasant place for you.
You did that?
A simple illusion. But if you sat in judgment of Kylar Stern, would you give him eternal paradise?
You're not exactly disinterested in my choice, are you?
You've become a player, Night Angel. No one is disinterested in your choice.
How long Kylar stood there, he didn't know. All he knew was that if he made the wrong choice, he might have a very long time to regret it. The mathematical formulae were no help. They were full of infinities and zeros, with no way of knowing on which side of the equation they landed. There was no hedged bet when you might be throwing away eternity in paradise, or avoiding eternity in hell, or taking an eternal existence on Earth with all its flaws, weighed against merciful oblivion. Kylar didn't have Count Drake's faith in a loving God, or Durzo's faith that there was no such God. He knew that he had done a lot of evil by anyone's definition. He knew that he had done some good. He'd given his life for Eline.
Eline. She filled his mind and his heart so utterly that it ached. If he chose life, even if she accepted him, she would grow old and die in the smallest fraction of his life. The odds were that she never would accept him. Never could. All the ifs and maybes rose and fell in great towers of foundationless suppositions, but Eline remained. Kylar loved her. He always loved her. Eline was the risk he would take every time. He made his choice and ran toward the plane door. He screamed and jerked upright. Eline screamed. Uli screamed. Taking huge, gasping breaths, Kylar ripped open his blood-encrusted tunic. His chest was smooth, the skin perfect. He touched his demolished shoulder. It was whole, as healthy as the fingers of his right hand. There wasn't a scar on his body. He sat there blinking, not even glancing at Uli or Eline, who were frozen, staring at him. I'm alive. I'm alive? Yes, Kylar, Mama Kay said, coming into the room. Her calm was surreal. Kylar sat stupidly for a moment. It had all been real. He said, unbelievable. Kylar, one who kills and is killed. Durzo knew all along. Uli, seeming to take her cue from the calm Kylar and Mama Kay were showing, seemed to be fine with Kylar sitting up and talking when he'd been dead a moment before. Eline was not doing well. She stood up abruptly and walked out the door. Eline, wait! Kylar said. Wait. Just tell me one thing. She stopped and looked at him, confused, terrified, and hopeful at the same time. Her eyes full of tears. Who was it who gave you those scars? It wasn't Durzo, was it? It was Rat, right? You come back from the dead to ask me that? Of course it was Rat. She fled. Wait, Eline, I'm sorry. He tried to move, but it seemed he'd used up all his strength to sit up. She was gone. Wait, what the hell am I sorry about? Uli looked at Kylar accusingly. You aren't going to let her go, are you? Kylar held on to the edge of the bed like a lifeline. He looked at Uli and raised a hand helplessly, and had to quickly put it down to keep from falling over. How can I stop her? Uli stomped her foot and stormed out of the room. Mama Kay was laughing, but it was a different laughter than he'd heard from her before, deeper, fuller, truly happy. As if with the same act of will that had made her choose life, she'd set aside her cynicism. I know what you're thinking, Kylar. Durzo lied to you when he told you he'd hurt Eline. Of course he did. It was the only way he could save you. You had to kill him to succeed him. The Kakari couldn't complete the bond until its former master died. They sat there in silence, Kylar thinking of how Durzo's death cast his life in a completely different light. It was disconcerting to think how wrong he'd been about his master, thinking him so hateful, actually believing Durzo was capable of mutilating Doll Girl. But Kylar liked the picture that was emerging. Durzo Blint, the legend, had been a Kalis Thorn, the hero. Kylar wondered how many other heroes' names his master had worn. He felt a stabbing pain,
an emptiness in his stomach, a surge toward tears that he suppressed.
"I'm going to miss him,"
he said, his throat tight. Mama Kay's eyes mirrored his.
"Me too. But it's going to be all right. I don't know why, but I really believe that."
Kylar nodded.
"So you decided to live,"
he said, blinking tears away. He didn't want to break down in front of Mama Kay.
"And so did you." She arched an eyebrow at him, somehow holding both grief and happiness and amusement in her eyes all at once.
"She loves you, Kylar,
whether she realizes it or not. She dragged you out of the castle by herself. She refused to leave you. Jarl's men found her. It was only when they got you here that Uli saw your wounds were healing."
"She's furious with me," Kylar said.
"Furious the way a woman in love gets."
"I know."
"Have you told Uli who her mother is?" Kylar asked.
"No.
And I never will. I won't raise her into this. She needs a family.
I was hoping you and Eileen would be interested in the job."
Night came to the east shore of the Plith River in a smothering cloud. The city had been burning all day, and the night winds wafted the smell over the entire city. Fires reflected in the Plith, and low-hanging clouds held the ashy air like a pillow against the face of the city. A wagon clattered down a street, its driver hunched, face muffled against the malodorous air. He overtook a crippled woman with a bent back and a foot turned sideways.
"One up?"
his scratchy voice asked. The woman turned expectantly. Her face, too, was muffled, but her eyes were young, though both eyes had been blackened. Her Caladoran driver was supposed to be dark-haired and fat. This man was white-haired, lean as a rail, stooped, and almost lost in his clothes. She shook her head and turned away.
"Please, Eileen?"
Kylar asked with his own voice. She flinched.
"I should be scared of you, shouldn't I?"
"I'd never hurt you," he said.
Eyebrows above the eyes he'd blackened lifted incredulously.
"Well, not really hurt you."
"What are you doing?"
she asked, looking around. There was no one else out on the streets.
"I'd like to take you away from here,"
Kylar said, brushing back his bleached hair and smiling through his makeup.
"You and Uli both, we can go anywhere. I'm going to pick her up next."
"Why me, Kylar?"
He was dumbfounded.
"It's always been you. Don't say you love me," she said. "How can you love this?"
She jerked the scarf down and pointed at her scars.
"How could you love a freak?"
He shook his head.
"I don't love your scars, Eileen. I hate them."
"And you'll never see past that."
"I'm not finished," he said.
"Eileen, I've watched over you since we were children. For a long time, you're right, I couldn't see past your scars. I'm not going to give you some crap that they're beautiful. Your scars are ugly. But you aren't, Eileen. The woman I see when I look at you is amazing. She's smart, she's got a quick tongue, and she's got such a heart that it makes me believe that people can be good despite all I've seen to the contrary for my whole life."
His words were sinking into her, he could tell.
"Oh, Mama Kay, tell me I learned something about words from you. Tell me I learned something despite myself."
Eileen's hands waved like little birds.
"How can you say that? You don't know me."
"Aren't you still Doll Girl?"
Her hands came down, the little birds fluttering to rest.
"Yes," she said. "But I don't think you're still Azoth."
"No," he admitted. "I'm not.
I don't know who I am. Right now, I only know I'm not my master, and I won't live like he did. Hope seemed to leech out of her.
Kylar, she said.
And he saw that the name was a deliberate choice. I will always be grateful to you. But we would be a disaster. You would destroy me. What are you talking about? Mama Kay said your master intercepted all my letters.
Yes, but I've had a busy afternoon catching up, Kylar said.
She smiled sadly.
And you still don't understand?
Do girls ever make sense? He shook his head.
When we were children, you were the one who protected me, who looked out for me. You were the one who put me with a real family. I wanted to be with you forever. Then, when I was growing up, you were my benefactor who made me special. You were my secret young lord whom I loved so desperately and so foolishly. You were my Kylar, my poor nobleman that the Drake girls told me stories about. Then, you were the one who came to save me in jail.
He paused. And paused.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
Oh, Kylar. What happens to that silly girl when it turns out I'm not good enough for the man I've loved for my whole life?
You not good enough? It's a fairy tale, Kylar. I don't deserve it. Something will happen. You'll find somebody prettier, or you'll get tired of me, and then you'll leave me, and I'll never recover, because the only kind of love I have to offer is stupid and blind and so deep and powerful that I feel like I'm cracking just to hold it in. I can't just swoon and fall into bed with you, because you'll hop right out and get on with your life, and I never will.
I'm not asking you to make love with me.
So I'm too ugly for... He couldn't say a damn thing right. Enough! He roared, emotion filling his voice so suddenly that it shocked her into silence. I think you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen, Aline, and the purest and the best, but I'm not asking you to fuck.
Consternation played over her features, but she obviously didn't like being yelled at.
Aline, he said quietly. I'm sorry I yelled. I'm sorry I hit you. Even if it was to save you. I've thought I was dying twice in the last few days. Maybe I did die, I don't know. What I do know is that when I thought I was dying, you were my regret. No, not your scars, he said as she touched her face. I regretted that I hadn't turned myself into the kind of man that you could be with, that it wouldn't be just for me to be with you. Even if you wanted me. Our lives started in the same shithole, Aline, but somehow you've turned into you, and I've turned into this. I don't like what I've done. I don't like who I've become. You don't deserve a fairy tale? I don't deserve another chance, but I'm asking you for one. You're afraid that love is too risky? I've seen what happens when you don't risk it. Mama Kay and my master loved each other, but they were too afraid to risk it, and that destroyed them. We risk everything either way. I'm willing to risk it, to see the world through your eyes, Aline. I want to know you. I want to be worthy of you. I want to look in the mirror and like who I see. I don't know what's next, but I know I want to face it with you, Aline. I'm not asking you to fuck. But maybe someday I'll earn the right to ask you for something more permanent. He turned, and facing her was harder than facing 30 Highlanders. He extended his hand. Please, Aline, will you come with me? She scowled fiercely at him. Then looked away. Her eyes were shiny with tears, but it could have been from all the ash in the air.
She blinked quickly before looking back up at him. She searched his face for a long moment. He met her big brown eyes. He had turned away from them so many times, afraid she would see what he really was. He had turned away, afraid that she couldn't bear the sight of his filth. Now, he met that gaze. He opened himself to it. He didn't hide his darkness. He didn't hide his love. He let her gaze go all the way through him. To his wonder, her eyes filled with something softer than justice, something warmer than mercy.
"I'm so scared, Kylar."
"Me too," he said. She took his hand.